So moving on to agenda paper 7.
Thank you. We're now moving to agenda paper 7. So the committee received a submission about how to account for deferred taxes when the recovery of an asset carrying amount has multiple tax consequences. The submission describes a situation in which the recovery of an asset's carrying amount has tax consequences under two different tax regimes. The entity receives taxable economic benefits under one regime and a capital gain deduction under another regime. However, tax law prohibits the entity from using the capital gain deduction to offset taxable economic benefits in determining taxable profit. Paragraph 11 to 17 summarize the outreach performed, and paragraphs 18 to 42 include our analysis of the matter. Based on our analysis, we conclude that in the situation described, IAS 12 requires an entity to reflect separately the distinct tax consequences of recovering the asset's carrying amount when measuring deferred tax associated with that asset. I will now pause and direct your attention to the question 1 on page 13 and ask whether you agree with our analysis of the requirements in IAS 12. Thank you.
Bruce?
Thanks, Sue. I agree with the staff's conclusion where they got to, with a couple of caveats to that in terms of where they got. To start with, I actually wasn't really convinced in my mind, but the tax bases weren't apparent. I mean, I actually think if you apply the standard, I think you can get to that answer. So I wasn't too kind of pro that word apparent. I actually think in applying the standard, to me, they were pretty apparent in terms of where you got to them. The second thing is I didn't really agree with the analogy to the investment property. I mean, to me, investment property is a slightly different scenario. There we're almost saying we have land and buildings. There are two different assets that we're accounting for as one, but when we start looking at them separately, we're talking about them differently, whereas I think here we're talking about the same asset in which we're raising two different tax bases on. So I just think to me there's a bit of I could distinguish between the two quite a bit. That I didn't really think it was needed. I actually think that IAS 12 kind of gave me enough guidance in terms of where that was. So other than that, I mean, I agreed with the conclusion. I wasn't convinced by the apparent argument either.
But you agree with the conclusion.
Yeah.
Bertrand?
I agree with the staff analysis and the staff conclusion. Maybe something I was confused while reading the agenda paper and then the draft agenda decision is that in the draft agenda decision, tentative agenda decision, there is not enough emphasis put in really saying that both tax regimes will apply, and that's why you need to assess both. I mean, it is quite pretty clear in the agenda paper, but then when I read the draft tentative agenda decision, I said, yeah, do I really properly understood the agenda paper? Maybe I missed something because I don't see that effectively emphasized within the draft tentative agenda decision. I think this portion of the fact pattern that was analyzed by the staff is key to the conclusion. So I would have reiterate that in a with more emphasis in the draft tentative agenda decision while you're effectively explaining what the fact pattern is.
Okay, so at the moment it says that the committee observed that the recovery of the assets carrying amount gives rise to two distinct tax consequences.
Where are you exactly?
More than that. Page 16. Yeah, in the paragraph under the heading applying the fundamental principle to the fact pattern, the second sentence, the committee observed that it gives rise to two distinct tax consequences.
Yeah, but I understand that two distinct consequences that will apply to the entity.
Or that to both of two distinct.
I understand that there are two distinct tax consequences, but the point is
occur.
You cannot net the two because one will not compensate the other because you will have both simultaneously. Simultaneously, when I say simultaneously, I mean you will have one for the period you're using effectively the asset, and you will have mechanically the second one in the future coming. So it's what I'm saying.
Okay, all right, I understand.
And I would have put that in the while describing the fact pattern analyzed. So more probably on page 15.
All right, thank you. Brian.
Similar to Bruce, I do question the staff view that the tax base is not apparent. It seems that if the entity uses the licence and then sells it, it gets a tax deduction of 100. If the entity doesn't use the licence for very long and sells it, it gets a tax deduction of 100. If it uses it for half its life and sells it, it gets a it always gets a tax deduction of 100. So for me, the tax base is arguably kind of quite clear, and I think that has quite a substantial knock-on effect on the articulation of the rest of the argument, because paragraph 10, which has a fundamental principle in it, is quite an unusual statement of a fundamental principle, because it's in the 10th paragraph of the standard, and it seems that you invoke it only in this case where you can't decide what the tax base is, whereas I tend to think it's pretty clear what the tax base is. And the real difficulty in this kind of fact pattern is understanding how to address multiple tax consequences when you have a single tax base. So I tend to think that view one is one way of doing that. That is quite true to the idea that you can work out what the tax base is and it's a single tax base. And then view two is also acceptable because it becomes quite difficult to work out what to do if you think you have a single tax base and multiple tax consequences. So it does seem to me that the argumentation is quite driven by this view that the tax base is not apparent, whereas I think the tax base is apparent, and the complexity is how to deal with the different tax consequences. And to me, perhaps there's more than one way of trying to resolve that.
I thought Bruce was agreeing with the analysis, though, even though...
I did. It was just, to me, it was, I'm saying something slightly similar,
yeah,
but different.
So I think you're exactly in the same...
Not exactly the same, but I think we're both in agreement that...
why I'm saying I didn't think that was what... Exactly
no, but I think we're both in agreement that maybe the apparent...
Yeah.
That we think it's not...
But I think Bruce would... my understanding was that Bruce agreed that this was the sort of required account.
So if I overstated Bruce's reservation...
No.
I do apologise. I think we were both saying that we weren't quite sure why it wasn't apparent what the tax base was, and I think, Bruce, you saw that maybe as a drafting thing. I saw it as... Or maybe a little more than a drafting thing. I saw it as quite an important part of the flow of the argument.
OK. Michael?
Jumping again, I guess I was more sympathetic to the staff analysis that the tax base wasn't apparent, because I think what you're trying to say is that you recover the carrying amount through use, and that's not where you get your tax deduction. So the definition of tax base, which is of an asset, taxable benefits that will flow when you recover the carrying amount, that is zero. You only get the deduction, but you're not recovering the carrying amount. So I could see that's where how your analysis
that's
flowed.
That's a particular logic of what not immediately apparent means.
And I think from my perspective, I imagine that a requirement that says immediately apparent is quite a high hurdle. And the fact that we are having that discussion and that people are not sure how you apply that, and in addition to that, like the reading of that paragraph, I think might indicate that be as like apparent to everyone. And I think the only other thing I wanted to mention as well is that the fundamental principle is something that is discussed also in the introduction to IS 12. Just like the first, they are not numbered paragraphs, but that they explain using pretty much the same words, and that's just paragraph 10 then again recaps that's the principle behind the mechanics in IS 12.
Can I just come in? So on that, I mean, maybe just come back, sorry, to the misunderstanding that's here. I mean, let's face it, applying those definitions of tax base is never apparent, I think, to anybody almost anywhere. So definitely a high-hurdle story. But,
or relative.
Yeah, sure. But what I'm saying is, I mean, to me, when I look at the fact pattern, I think I see where Brian's coming from. To build the argument around paragraph 10 saying it's not apparent to me, my view is I didn't think we needed that. I actually think that the argument you've got there and how we can see it, so I agree with the conclusion we've got. I'm just saying I don't think we need to build it on a pillar of saying because it's not apparent. I think the principles in IS 12 are telling us what to do and we can apply them and get the answer. So I actually just think that I think dragging in this discussion around paragraph 10, my worry is somebody could turn around and say, well, actually it is apparent in my situation, therefore this agenda decision doesn't apply to what I'm doing. And I'm just not convinced that we need to build that into the argument.
While the staff digest that, could I ask for a show of hands on question two? So whether you agree with the recommendation not to add this matter to your standard setting agenda. And then do you want to propose any changes to the wording? Do you want to try and get a show of hands based on the wording as drafted?
As drafted would be.
Okay. I get a show of
hands. Before we vote on the.
Oh, I see, with Bertrand's clarification.
Because
we do something to make it more
clear. I was
clear.
A bit disappointed with the end of the draft tentative agenda decision. You said the entity then applies the requirements in IS 12 considering the applicable tax law in recognizing and measuring deferred tax for the identified temporary differences. Don't you want to elaborate a bit more in the way to account effectively for the DTL, the DTA, eventually considering whether you need to provision the DTA, whether offsetting applies or not, and so on and so forth, because the questions will then emerge when the decision is effectively released. So, because the answers are quite pretty obvious. So instead of having these two lines, don't we just provide the answer, which are. As Bruce and Brian mentioned, if I correctly understood what they said, I mean, it's quite pretty obvious. You got the answer. Just stating the answer.
So I think what you're, if I understand correctly, Bertrand, what you're suggesting is that at the bottom of page 16, rather than what we were doing there was simply pointing people to say, once you've made this decision, off you go and apply all the requirements in IS 12 in terms of how you recognise and measure that. I think what you're suggesting is you think, and by the way, I think we couldn't, you know, we might risk not picking up everything if we didn't do it as a for example or something, but you would suggest that we add maybe some for example considerations, maybe along the lines of what's in paragraph 33 of the paper, and maybe possibly in addition mentioning offsetting or something. Is that
That sort of level of detail?
For instance.
Okay. Yeah. Guy?
I just want to pick up on that. I was initially thinking the exact same thing when I first read it, but I talked myself out of that because, we very clearly say there are two temporary differences to account for. Mm-hmm. And so if I go beyond what is said in that exact sentence, all I'm going to be doing is reiterating verbatim what's in the standard. And so I thought it was unnecessary. We were going to just end up turning
for
one
me it's
page
pretty obvious
two
that
pages,
yeah, the answer is automatic. Yeah. So I don't say the contrary.
All right, so shall we try voting with the words as they are in the first instance?
With or without the
Bertrand's
the emphasis, probably, yeah, just that's
leaving as it is. Okay. We'll look at whether we can make it more clear. There's the two things going on at mm-hmm. once, I think, as Bertrand has suggested, but subject only to that. So not proposing to expand the two lines at the bottom of page 16 for this vote. Could I get a show of hands for who supports the proposed wording in the tentative agenda decision?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
How many?
Okay.
Sorry, for the recording, you want to say it louder.
11.
Okay.
Okay. I would have thought IS 12 was going to be the easiest discussion.
Credit to Gustavo's pick.
Yes, Gustavo, you made it all straight. All right. So, changing tack now.